Hello, I'm Alex Saviuk here at Supernova, and you are listening to Behind the Panels.
They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way.
It's really dark in here.
For this reason, above all, this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 64 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that doesn't like to wait in line, so we got accredited. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm David McVeigh.
Here we are standing live on the floor of Supernova Sydney, day two. We've been walking around for the last day and a bit, talking to creators, we've been talking to some of the cosplayers, and we've also been talking to some of the stallholders here as well, seeing what they think of this massive event that is Supernova.
So this isn't your normal issue. We're not reviewing a book. We're not going through the news and so forth. This is Supernova only. And we hope you enjoy some of these little bits and pieces that we've gathered for you.
We're taking next week off, but we'll be back in the next episode for Paul Bedford's The List. This is a Australian-created and owned comic, which has recently been optioned by Hollywood, apparently.
And you'll notice that during this show, we've actually got a little bit of Paul Bedford talking about this book. So enjoy that, and that hopefully will prime you up for that episode.
Joining us again on Behind the Panels is Nicola Scott. She first joined us to promote Oz Comic Con appearance, but here... since that interview, she's been announced as being one half of the all-Australian creative team on DC's Earth 2. Here she is talking about what that creative team means to the Australian comics industry. So congratulations on being one of the first Australian all-Australian creative teams on a DC book. So we spoke to you a little bit about this last week, but now we know who the writer's going to be. Is there any hints about you can give us about where you and Tom are taking the book?
I don't know what I can say, other than the mysteries that have been sort of developing in Earth 2. We're getting to the point at the end of the story arc that's about to start, which is James's last story arc, we're getting to the point where we're going to start revealing some of these mysteries. So by the time Tom comes onto the book, it's the point where we've reached a crescendo and suddenly everything's going to come out.
What do you think this means for Australian comics generally, having such a prominent book with an all-Australian creator on it?
I think they've been growing, the American editors and such, their awareness of the fact that there is Australian talent has been growing as more and more Australians have been breaking into the industry. I think that there is now an Australian creative team is something that's really going to make an impact on everybody else's awareness as well. And I think, you know, other publishers are going to start really looking at what's coming out of Australia. What books we're producing, what kind of writers and artists we're producing, and I think, you know, the amount of people that are currently working in the American business, pretty big. I think it's going to get bigger.
One of the great things about coming to Supernova is finding books that you should be reading, and I had a whole lot of people telling me about this book, The List. You need to read The List by Paul Bedford. It's fantastic. Managed to actually find his table here at Supernova, sit down and have a chat with him, and he was very generous to give us a copy of The List to review, which we will be doing in an upcoming episode, next week in fact, of Behind the Panels. Here's a little bit of him talking about his book and how it came to be. Paul Bedford, welcome to Behind the Panels. Thanks for agreeing to talk to us. So you've got The List out you're plugging today at Supernova. Could you tell us a little bit about what The List is about?
It's something that's a bit of a worry to write. It's a 200-page psychological horror. I wrote the original script about 99. I lost every single copy, hard and soft, until I moved into another house in 2004. And I was unpacking, I found the script. I'm like, shit, I better do something with this before I lose it again. Adapted it into a... it was originally like a, you know, indie screenplay type thing. Adapted it into a graphic novel format and sent it out to a few guys. And Mr. Arvie Burnshaw was nice enough to introduce me to Henry Pop, who is the penciler on The List. And over a massive gestation period of 5 years, we produced, the book you see before you now. and I don't know what's wrong with people, but it seems to have kicked off. It seems to, I don't know, I think it's because I try not to bullshit the audience, basically.
One of my favourite local artists and writers is, in fact, Tristan Jones, who you may know his name from things like the Ghostbusters work he's been doing. Certainly, if you're a fan of IDW's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you'll know his work. He's working at the moment on a series called Sebastian Hawks with Greg McLean, the director of Wolf Creek, which he talks about a little bit in this interview, which you'll hear a bit of now. So you've been working for a few years now in US industry as well. You've managed to break into that. How difficult was it for you to break out of the Australian scene and into the US industry?
I was kind of fortunate in that I think I sidestepped. Well, fortunate is kind of dubious when I'm talking like this. I don't mean to say there's anything wrong with the Australian scene, but I kind of sidestepped the Australian scene and went straight into the American scene. I used to work in film and television and study and all that sort of stuff. In that was what I was trained to do, screenwriting and directing and sound and all that sort of stuff. And I was script doctoring and going back and forth with a guy named Murphy who wrote a book called Umbra years ago. And, you know, we were sort of talking comics and he was talking about making this thing of his into a film. So we're talking about how you could turn that into a script. And he asked me if I've ever written a comic script. And I said no. And so he said, well, you know, try writing it. And I sent this thing off to him. I said, you know, if you put the turtles in this, you know, if you make it a turtle script, then we'll buy it. So I kind of got straight into the turtles. That was 2005. And it took a year for that first script to get published because of the scheduling they had already, but in the meantime they put me to work on comic books in the UK, the Turtles comics over in the UK for the animated series over there. So I worked on that and then wrote with the Mirage crew for about I think that ended up about 2010 when they sold off to Nickelodeon, and then I had to go back to drawing because the writing work dried up.
With the Turtles, were you a fan of the property beforehand? And if so, were there particular influences to your versions of the Turtles?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of grew up. Some of the first comics I read were the Eastman and Laird black and white things in the trade paper. Like, I couldn't get them here because I wasn't aware of comics really then, like the comic collector market and all that sort of stuff. But I saw the coloured reprints of the old Mirage stuff, the first publishing collections. And they were in, like, a Kmart. Down in the town that I grew up on, and I saw them there, and I saw the first thing that registered were the Triceratons, which I think most Turtles fans will know, but they're basically Triceratops men. And because I was a dinosaur kid, I was more interested in these guys than I was in about the Turtles and the ninjas and all this sort of stuff. But it kind of grew on from there. Like once I sat down and read it as a kid, then you know that's where it all started growing. So I'd seen. Because we're kind of a couple of years behind the US in terms of all those trends, I'd read the Mirage comics before I'd seen the animated series. And it just kind of went from there, I guess. I think every kid born after 82 or after 1980s, you know, got some kind of Turtles fandom in their blood. Yeah, just kind of pure dumb luck, I guess, that I ended up working on the comics. So, yeah, it's mainly the Eastman and Laird stuff that's, you know, the strongest influence.
Tom Taylor is probably one of Australia's biggest success stories, both in Australia and the US at the moment in the comics industry. He's probably best known locally for his work on The Deep, which we reviewed not too long ago. But he's also been doing some stellar work on Injustice, God Among Us tie-in series for the video game.
Which was a really good read. We actually started reading that for the shows, and we've actually featured it a couple times on the What We've Been Reading section.
As you probably heard earlier in the show, he and Nicholas Scott are now the All-Australian team for DC's Earth 2. We speak to him a little bit about the direction of that book and what else he's got planned for the future. You've had a massive year yourself. Congratulations on the success of the second volume of The Deep, your Injustice work, and soon you've just been announced as the writer of Earth 2.
Yes, I have, which is super exciting. It's daunting, I'm starting to realize just how many fans it has already, and the fan base it has, so everybody's got opinions, but I'm really looking forward to it, and especially looking forward to working with Nicola Scott, who's a very good friend of mine. Yeah.
Yeah, we chatted to Nicola yesterday, and she was talking about the significance of an all-Australian team on a major DC title. What do you reckon that means to the local industry?
I don't know. I mean, it just means that there's more of us out there and getting out there, and hopefully it'll be a bit more noticeable. Somebody's told me that there's a great big, like, double-page spread on it in the Sydney Morning Herald this morning and on in The Age in Victoria. I haven't actually seen it yet myself, but apparently there's me in my very, very tidy desk, which isn't actually truthful at all. It's a lie of a photo. But hopefully, you know, we want more. We want a lot more comic creators. I want more people I can talk to and say, hey, you do what I do. That's great, you know? For Australia to be given our own universe to play in is kind of cool, and we just have to try not to break it.
Dave, we've been wandering for a while now. What have you been enjoying so far?
I got to tell you, one of my favorite thing, of course, is the cosplayers. I just think they're wonderful. And for those who have been following me for a while, you'll know that the cosplay video that we put up from Supernova a couple years ago was a massive hit. And I think it's one of those things where everybody just kind of gets off seeing their favorite heroes come to life.
So did you say gets off on cosplayers?
Okay, you twisted my words, but I think, and we've got. Let's have a listen to some of these people and why they do this, why and the hows and how long it took them to get ready for some of this.
So, how long have you been cosplaying before?
No, this is officially the first time. Been meaning to do it for years. Been coming to Supernova now for probably 5 years, 6 years now. So it's more like finally got the guts up to actually get out there and do it. And my mate decided to go as a stormtrooper, so I thought, why not? I'll do this. So
how many Supernovas is this for you?
This is probably my third one, but my first one cosplaying.
Third for me, first time cosplaying as well.
Who have you come to Supernova as today?
Well, I am the cabbage merchant from Avatar. He is a minor character, and his cabbage stand always gets knocked over, so I'm representing a minor character today.
Okay, so we're here at day two of Supernova, and I have found probably the most awesome Catwoman I have seen in quite some time, since the movie, perhaps.
Wow, thank you.
So how long did this take to put together?
Well, I actually started in April after the Gold Coast Supernova, because I've come from the Gold Coast. And technically, I bought little pieces off eBay and just spent ages modifying them to try and get the correct look and to try and get it looking as much like the Christopher Nolan Catwoman as possible.
You've done a sensational job.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Duffman!
Why, hello, sir.
Are you ready to party?
I'm ready to party! Oh, yeah!
So you've gone with a classic Green Arrow Black Canary look this year. Is there any reason you've chosen this particular look?
Because we don't like the new 52.
What is it about the cosplay scene that interests you?
Oh, like just the freedom of it. It gives you so much confidence too, because you can embody that character and you just walk around and you just feel really great about yourself. And I meet so many amazing people here. Like I met my whole group of friends there and all online because they're all interested in the same thing.
A long-time fan to the show will remember that we did an hour and a bit long interview with the phenomenal Chris Claremont on his classic X-Men run. We actually managed to sit down with him again at Supernova and have another chat with him for about 20-odd minutes to talk about his graphic novels in particular that he was doing in the early 80s and the start of his New Mutants and Wolverine runs. Have a listen to that. So, Chris Claremont, welcome back to Behind the Panels. This is the second time we've spoken with you. When we left off our conversation last time, we'd spoken about the first 50 issues of your Uncanny X-Men run, and we're about to the...
It might be easier to see.
About it starting the 80s, so which was a big change for X-Men at the time. It's kind of the start of the X-Men empire in a lot of ways, when New Mutants, Excalibur, Wolverine all starting. I understand you were quite reluctant to spin off into New Mutants initially.
Well, not reluctant per se, it was just we had one book, we wanted to keep focused on that. But the basic reason that catalyzed the genesis of New Mutants was that, one, your pen. We needed something for Charlie to do, because unfortunately the existence of the team that we had, they didn't need a teacher. I mean, they were all adults. They were all relatively experienced as heroes and as characters, I suppose you could say. And, you know, what could he teach them? Also, being in his wheelchair, he couldn't keep up at the pace they were running. So we'd always thought, Wheezy and I had always thought in terms of wanting to branch out to a team more focused on the school itself. What catalyzed everything was Mark Grunewald thinking of putting together a West Coast... Putting together a West Coast team of young superheroes, young mutants. And my feeling solipsistically was I'd made this... You know, I was one of the factors that made this book a success. I wasn't going to cede a major chunk of its reality to anyone else without taking a shot at it myself. And I had very specific things I wanted to do with the concept of a younger team. So we pulled together New Mutants. And the aspect we were going for was that obviously they were young. They were far more varied and international than the original X-Men, much in keeping with, the X-Men as a whole. Well, my stuff, much better, more fun than doing X-Men. And a lot more conflicted about why they're here, what they want to do. And it also gave us a tremendous opportunity for conflict with the X-Men, because if you have a group of mutant students, well, obviously the argument would be made that Kitty should be with them. Well, except at this point, Kitty's been with the X-Men now for a couple of years. She's helped save the universe twice. She was almost eaten by the Brood. Like any 14-year-old, there was no way in... Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate it.
I moved a couple of months ago, and I got a truckload of your stuff in the garage, so I'm in the way.
Well, tell George to invite me back. I'll happily sign them. So the like any 14-year-old, there was no way she wanted to be relegated down to the class of little kids, even though some of them were her age or older.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for Gambit.
Oh, the pleasure was mine.
You'll find the whole of that interview up that we'll put up as a special one-shot as part of the podcast feed, as we did with the first interview. We've been told that perhaps we might be able to get a few more interviews in the future with Chris.
I think this might actually be the first time we've done a sequel.
David, I said I'd never do sequels. I never signed on.
So, yes, no, look, Chris is one of our favorites, as everybody knows, and it'll be wonderful if we can just keep going. What we want to talk to him about next time is some of his own creator-owned stuff and his own creator-generated stuff, because he's very excited about that.
Yeah, you heard that when he was talking about Murata. What we need to do is lock him into one of those Marvel 8 interview contracts and pay him $50 for the privilege or something.
That would be awesome.
So, Supernova is not all about celebrities. It's also about selling stuff. Much like when you listen to that Girl from Ipanema section here on Behind the Panel. Now, we spoke to a couple of different storeholders here. We spoke to some people who were selling some classic comics to see what they got out of Supernova. Also, a brand new comic store, which has a rather unique combination. Supplements and comics. That's superhero supplements and comics. It's an odd combination, isn't it?
Well, there's a bit of synergy there. I mean, superheroes have to get big somehow.
Yeah. So where did you get the idea for the shop?
Well, my partner Abdul and I have actually... I had a supplement shop before, then Abdul took it over, and then basically we just formed this combination because I started a comic business and we decided to do 2-in-1.
Fantastic. So what are you selling out here today?
Basically action figures. We've got some chess figures, some proteins and ready-to-drink protein shakes. We've got some Doctor Who figurines. They're on special for $20 or 2 for $30. We've got some Harry Potter, some statues as well, and some vintage and old comic books.
And we can find you in Newtown?
Yeah, you can find us in Newtown, 76 Enmore Road, Newtown.
You're from Arcadia Unbound. So what was your name again?
Gary Smith.
And how many years have you been coming to Supernova for?
Oh, since he started it when it was just a comic fest or whatever it was. As long as Danny's been going, I've been coming to his shows. Yeah.
And what do you find that people tend to ask for the most?
Well, basically what I supply is the back issues of the comics. A lot of the other guys are doing all the new stuff all the time, so I don't know, must have an organisational passion or something, as rough as it is. But yeah, that and some toys and some of the great artists like Frank Frazetta and modern day guys like Dave Stevens. And just, I've always been into the comics because of the art. It's some brilliant, brilliant art that's in the pages, and people that don't know about comics just think, oh, kiddie books, but some of the art is fantastic. Frank Frazetta unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, and I think it was Kirk Hammett from Metallica bought his Conan, one of his classic Conan pieces from Frank Frazetta, his estate, for $1 million it sold for. And this is something that's about this big that was done as a paperback cover back in the 60s. Brilliant stuff, yeah. So,
I certainly love Frank Frazetta myself. I've got a few issues at home. What's some of the more interesting stuff that you're selling here today?
Well, you've got to bring a little bit of whatever's currently hot, like the DC New 52 stuff. People are always asking for that. But I like to supply a little bit of the alternate sort of independent stuff too, but mainly your Marvel, your DC, big thing, especially like Superman's coming out of the movies and their Spider-Man. Anyone who's had the movie exposure recently has it's tended to drive the interest in the comic, like the Green Arrow. The Arrow show on TV is very popular, so people are after that. But then, you know, the kids still want Sonic the Hedgehogs and Simpsons stuff, and like I said, we try to supply a little bit of everything, yeah.
And so what does coming to something like Supernova do for a business like yours?
Well, it's, you know, an ideal thing. Traditionally, people came to expos like this just to hand out their information. So I get to, you know, get a cash injection, help get me ahead on some of the bills, and we'll catch up on some of them and don't much get ahead of it, but get the name out there. And we always, what I love about this too is the fan base and the cosplay. It's just fantastic. And we take lots of photos, and we've got a Facebook page, and we stick that up on our like gallery there. Usually over 100 images, maybe 200 sometimes, of different people in cosplay. And I get a lot of feedback from people. You know, we hand the flyer out with the information, and they get up there and they like it, and it helps. You know, from a business point of view, it gets the name around and gets it out there. And if they visit the page, they see what we supply.
One of the pleasures of coming to Supernova is the chance to meet absolute legends. We've already spoken and met Chris Claremont. Another legend from Marvel and DC is Alex Savick. He's probably best known for his 8-year run, I think, on Web of Spider-Man. But he's done everything from the classic Green Arrow, Green Lantern issues, a couple of which I actually got him to sign at Supernova. We sat down with him for a brief chat this afternoon at day 2 of Supernova. Here's what that sounded like. I was reading recently that you, when you first started studying, you were studying with, amongst others, Will Eisner. What were the prospects of an artist in those days?
Well, let's see. I studied with Will in the early 1970s, and I guess as far as prospects go, I'd like to say it was maybe. It was difficult to get into the business. At the same time, it was, I think, easier than it is today, because obviously over the last 40 years, art styles have changed. And with each successive decade, it just seems that the demands of becoming a comic book artist are just higher and higher, greater and greater to get in, especially with the advent of the internet and the gaming industry and the video artwork that you see digitally on the internet. I think comics are literally trying to compete with that kind of a style of artwork in terms of the depth and perspective and the color. And that being said, I'd say in the old days when I was working on a comic book, it was normal for a comic book penciler to do 2 pages a day in pencil. Some were talented enough, like let's say Jack Kirby and John Buscema, to do 3 pages a day and even 4 if they had to. And nowadays, when I speak to some of the current crop of younger artists, they do unbelievable work, but I'll ask them, how much do you do? And they say, well, I try to do about 3 or 4 pages a week. So if they can, basically if the editors can accommodate an artist's schedule to be able to put out some kind of a, I won't even say a monthly title, although they do have monthly titles, I think that one of the major differences is that they have story arcs now where they might hire a writer and an artist to do 3, 4, 5, 6 issues of something and then give them a year to produce it. And in the meantime, they've got another group doing another 3 or 4 or 6 issues. And so literally there won't be a gap in publishing, but at least the creators have a chance to do their work at a much of an easier pace, or a pace that suits them to create their best work possible.
So you kind of started your professional comics career with DC, and so what? When you came aboard in those days, what was DC like in those days? I guess because I'm sure it's a very different beast to what it is today.
Well, I can only go by my experience of, let's say, how it was when I got there, because I'm not really too aware of how it is in the mainstream today. I've been literally out of that particular top two mainstream of DC and Marvel. Editorially, things have changed dramatically. I mean, maybe I know one or two people in each company there that still have remained over the years. But at the time when I got to DC, I would say that there was still the sort of the old guard in terms of editorship. You had people like Julius Schwartz and Murray Boltonoff, Robert Kaniger, and these people would come to the office in a shirt and tie. Okay, and so there was also this particular feeling of a bullpen aspect where artists would still come to the offices and actually work at the offices. And I'd say more so at Marvel, even when I got to Marvel, before I got there in 86 and earlier than that, they had such a huge bullpen where people had their cubicles, and John Romita had a cubicle and Herb Trimpe had a cubicle. John Romita told us that told me at one time that Jack Kirby was so prolific in how quickly he could draw these unbelievably penciled pages. He would literally have a cubicle filled with smoke from his cigar, and there'd be this shadowy figure hunched over a drawing table, and at lunch he would emerge from this cloud of smoke, and after the smoke cleared they'd look in and there'd be 2 beautifully penciled pages that he started at 9 in the morning and got done by 1 in the afternoon, literally on the drawing table. And after about a 2-hour lunch, he came back to resume creating the cloud of smoke in his cubicle, and by dinner time he left and there was either another 1 or 2 pages of new artwork produced on his drawing table. So there's nobody around in today's society that can literally do that kind of work, have that kind of talent to be able to just literally take their mind and project it onto a paper and use their hand and pencil as a vehicle to just start at point A on the top, upper left-hand corner and end up in the bottom right and literally just have the stuff flow off his pencil. He was just so one of a kind.
And look, you know, I'm sitting here surrounded by, you know, Spider-Man, and I'm sure a lot of people are asking you to do Spider-Man sketches for them. You were on Web of Spider-Man for about 8 years, I think it was.
Yes, it was.
And what kept you, I mean, what kept it fresh all that time for you?
Well, actually, even though you say Web of Spider-Man for almost 8 years, I've been drawing Spider-Man now, or associated with the character, since 1987, each and every year since then, in one way, shape, or form. There was that 7.5-year stretch where I did Web. After that, I did Spider-Man Adventures and Adventures of Spider-Man based on the animated series. And then as soon as I got off those books, I got hired on to do the Spider-Man Sunday newspaper strip. So I've been still penciling the newspaper strip since 1997, and I've been inking the daily since 2003. But People have asked me the same question you just posed to me as far as keeping it fresh. It's the writing. If the writing is good, and I've always enjoyed this, it's the supporting cast and the way they're handled between Peter and Mary Jane. And, of course, you know, you wouldn't have Spider-Man without J. Jonah Jameson and Robbie Robertson and the entire staff of the Daily Bugle and all his, let's say, high school buddies that became his college buddies like the Osbournes and the Flash Thompsons and those people. So having that particular group around him, it just leads, you know, just leads a writer to have plenty of material to keep coming up with new stories and ideas.
And the other thing that we can see behind you is your association with the Phantom and Defenders of the Earth. And one of the things I loved was Defenders of the Earth when I was reading comics as a kid. And that was always one of my favorite things. It seems different parts of the world have different levels of enthusiasm for the Phantom, and it's always been big in Australia. Have you always... Does continuing appeal of Phantom surprise you at all?
I heard years ago that the Phantom was very popular in Australia and also in Europe, particularly Sweden and Norway and those countries. But then at the same time, when you talk about that, the Phantom is big in India, he's big in France, he's big in Spain, Brazil. And the odd part is that the Phantom seems to go through different costume color changes from the various countries. I believe in France he's basically red, in Brazil he's brown, and in some other countries he's green, and in Sweden he's dark blue with red trunks, and basically I've always known him to have a purple costume with blue striped trunks. And I enjoyed the Phantom as a young child. As a matter of fact, that was probably the first superhero character that appealed to me, because my dad would bring home the Sunday newspaper and I'd get to see the wonderful drawings of Cy Barry, who's still very, very popular. And literally here, it's funny because people come up to me and they appreciate the work that I've done so far. They love the Phantom. I've got, you know, a couple of prints that I'm featuring. But it's odd that you talk about Spider-Man, where I just mentioned to my wife, I said, you know, I've done a number of sketches since I've been down here yesterday, and so far nobody's asked me to draw the Phantom, but 90% of the requests are all about Spider-Man. But yet, when the people come up to me and just chat, they will chat about the Phantom. And I've got young people coming up and saying, oh, my mom introduced me to the Phantom, or my grandfather, and they used to read it to me since I was a little kid, and they enjoyed it since they were little. And so somebody said that it's somehow the family aspect of the Phantom with his wife and the children living with them, etc., and the fact that even though he's heroic, there's a certain amount of violence, but it's literally, I guess, nonviolent by today's standards. I mean, sure, if he punches you, he'll give you the skull mark on your chin, and he's always going to get involved in a particular skirmish. But although he wears guns, he never really fires them to kill anybody. He might shoot a weapon out of your hand or use them just to intimidate. But I think it's just, again, that particular family aspect that the people, for some reason or other, have enjoyed. And the generations that have passed it on, they just keep passing it on. So it's wonderful that the character, as old as he is, you know, conceived in 1936, can still maintain so much popularity, and I don't see it dwindling anytime in the near future.
Fantastic. Alex, thank you so much for your time, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your stay in Australia, and you're off to Perth Supernova after this, I believe.
Yes. Well, this show will be over, I guess, in a couple of hours. Time flies quickly. I'm heading out to Perth on Wednesday, so I should enjoy that. And then I guess they've already sort of hinted at possibly getting me out to maybe Melbourne and the Gold Coast next year or the year after. So at some point, I will be returning to Australia.
Look forward to seeing you then. Thanks again. One of my favorite things here at Supernova, of course, is getting to meet some of the artists, some of the creators, actually getting them to do some work. I mean, I've actually got Nicola Scott to do me a sketch of Green Arrow, which was fabulous because she doesn't normally draw that.
And it's a fabulous sketch.
Yeah. We'll actually put scans up on our website as well. And I also got Alex Savick to put to a sketch of classic Green Arrow. I got him to sign a few issues. Very, very excited by that. So I've had a very green weekend, David.
We also got our friend Josh Spencer. We put him under the gun because we asked him how long it would take him to do a caricature, and he said it would take him 5 minutes. And so we actually put the full video of this up on our YouTube channel. But here's a little bit of our commentary while we were actually getting him to do that caricature of me, and we'll put that scan up as well for you. We have got here Josh Spencer. For those who have been reading or watching or listening to our show, I should say, you'll know this. This is Josh Spencer's word. Josh Spencer, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm very good. So this is your first time at Supernova, is that right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So how's it going for you?
It's going really good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Have you sold a lot of caricatures today?
It's going all right. It's a bit slow, but yeah, doing all right.
So are you being overwhelmed with people at certain points in the day, or is it just like a steady flow?
No, it's a bit like that. It's like nothing, then lots, and then nothing, and then lots, so...
So the question is, how fast can you do a caricature for these people?
Usual time is about 5 minutes per person, yeah.
About 5 minutes, huh? We should put this to the test, I think.
Yeah, we should. You can time me, set a watch, and see how long it takes.
Maybe you could do a caricature of me.
Sure.
Yeah? What do you charge for caricatures?
The A4 is $15, and A3 is $25.
Fantastic. And where can people find you if you're not at Supernova?
You can look at my website, which is attackninja.blogspot.com.
Still the most awesome domain on the internet.
It is pretty awesome there. Thank you.
We have promoted it heavily on Geek, actually. It's a wonderful, wonderful domain, and your work is really fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so Josh is now starting the caricature at this point.
Do you want to come around?
Come around?
Yeah.
How are we going over there, Richard?
It's looking good so far. It's looking pretty much like you, so I'm not sure if looking good is quite the word I'm looking for.
Well, it is of me, so I don't know how good it's going to look.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
At the moment, we haven't quite started on the bottom part of your beard, and you're looking very much like a young Tom Selleck, I think.
I'm happy with young Tom Selleck. That's good.
Now it's starting to look like you now.
Oh, dear.
David, I'm getting a little high off the marker pen back here.
You'll have to tell me what the time is so far.
I don't know. I actually haven't been timing you.
We've been recording for about 4 minutes total.
Oh,
so
there you go. Well, we do have a timer of sorts.
It's finished.
Here we go.
Yep.
Ready?
That is awesome. He's made me look like George Lucas.
Can we hold them up side by side? Let's go.
What do you think? Perfect. And can we have a time check, please? Brilliant work. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
And there's the girl from Ipanema, which means it must be time for us to plug us.
So David, I think they've been doing enough plugging of us the last few days.
So where can we find more of you, Richard?
You can find me on Twitter at DVDBits. You can find me online at TheRealBits.com. That's TheRealBits.com. And, of course, BehindThePanels.net. And I'm also writing on a weekly basis for Newsarama.com, so you can check me out there.
And you can find me at GeekActually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. And remember to head over to our Cafe Press site. Link is at BehindThePanels.net. Where you can buy our merchandise, t-shirts, and so forth. If you didn't get a pin at Supernova, which they're available there on the site as well. So it's been a great time.
And that's Supernova done and dusted for another year. I don't know about you, David, but I'm exhausted.
And my feet are killing me. There's a lot of walking and a lot of crowds. So hopefully you've enjoyed this, you've enjoyed the cosplayers and so forth. Now remember that some of this video will be up on our YouTube channel, which you'll find the link for at behindthepanels.net. So some of the stuff you've heard you can then watch, and you can actually see what we've been talking about during that time.
It was great to catch up with some of our listeners here as well, particularly John D, who we spent a bit of time with. Look, it's been a great couple of days, but I am going to sit down and have a rest for the next couple of weeks. I am going to sit down and read The List by Paul Bedford, which is our next pick of the week. Go out and find a copy of this, support the local, and we'll come back and we'll review that in detail in a few weeks. Until then, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And this is Behind the Panels.
Time for a disappearing act, boys.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out! Here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there, there goes the Spider-Man.